Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Football Social Daily, your daily Premier League podcast.
Welcome to Football Social Daily. We are ticking off the days until the new Premier League season begins. But before liftoff on August the 13th, transfers are still very much the top topic in the English top flight. The saga of the summer has taken another twist. Since the last episode of Football Social Daily, Tottenham's star striker Harry Kane has failed to report for pre-season training. Not once, not twice, but three times. What does that mean for the Spurs hitman and his Tottenham future amidst heavy links to Manchester City? And City are not messing about this summer, it seems. Not only is Kane on the shopping list, but Aston Villa talisman Jack Grealish is too, and reports today are claiming he could sign a new deal with Man City as soon as this afternoon. Meanwhile, Villa have added a new attacker to their ranks, which has further fanned the flames. Plus, there's an update in Arsenal's pursuit of Leicester midfielder James Maddison. And across London, will Chelsea ever learn from their mistakes as they see an £85 million bid turned down for Romelu Lukaku? All that to come here on Football Social Daily, the Premier League podcast with a new episode every single day of the top flight season, which of course hasn't begun yet, so a slightly reduced schedule for now. But if you hit subscribe, that way when we are back underway for 21-22, you won't miss a beat. I'm Niall McCorn, and to chew the fat with me today, you've got Marley Anderson and Ian Brannan. Morning to you, lads.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Right, Kane doesn't report for Spurs training, but you two have reported for the podcast, so we're off to a good start, and that is where we're going to start here on today's show. Yeah, absolutely.
We had a gentleman's agreement, it's fine.
Yeah, well, we're not going to fine you for not turning up.
No one else is interested in our services either.
You're probably not quite worth 100 plus million, but there we go. We'll get into that in a second. So that's the big story over the last 48 hours or so since we last released an episode of the podcast. Harry Kane didn't turn up for pre-season training or coronavirus testing at Tottenham Hotspur on Monday. Didn't do it on Tuesday. He hasn't turned up today, Wednesday, either. There's been a massive reaction to this, Marley, but I wanted to know whether you think it's been an overreaction. Because this happens quite a lot, doesn't it, in transfers? But because it's such a high-profile case in Harry Kane, do you think it might have been blown out of proportion a little bit?
Yeah, definitely, because this isn't new. This isn't something we've never seen before. Every fan of a club has had a player, you know, refuse to turn up to training when they want a move at some point. So
Tevez played golf for 6 months when he was at Manchester City.
I know, it's mad, isn't it? Like, it's not even, I think, just because he's English, and I think people are probably thinking, would an English player react like that and behave like that? But what else? You know, what else can he do? He's told Levy, not this year, last year, that he wanted to leave. I'm sure that last season he said, "I'll give it one more year, and if we don't win anything, you know, I'm thinking about my future." So this is nothing new. And still in this, you know, we don't seem to be that close to an, like, a move. I know he's meant to go to Man City, if anywhere, obviously, but we're not sort of on the verge of it being announced, we don't think. So, you know, it's one of them where he's like, what else does he do? Like, he has to show that he wants to leave Spurs. It's no surprise to anyone, his teammates, the fans, the board, Levy, anyone. So, you know, why turn up? Like, why carry on? I don't think he's doing anything wrong, really. I think they deserve... He like his professionalism over the years deserves an amicable ending, and even if like fans go to hate him and stuff like that, they can't really hate him because he's also kept them in the top six for 6-7 years now. His goals, his performances, he was the one who took on the mantra of when Bale and Modric and Van der Vaart left. He was the one left there, still keeping them competitive. Wasn't the absolute that they signed on the back of that, because they ended up signing, you know, was it Paulinho and Lamella and Dembele, and I mean Dembele was all right, and Vertonghen and Eriksen, and so a couple of them were all right, but the rest of them were rubbish. Soldado came in as a striker, for God's sake. So, you know, he's given them enough, and I think he deserves a sort of peaceful ending. But, I mean, if you're ever going to say who's not going to give you a nice little amicable ending, it's Daniel Levy. So you've got to sort of push him towards, you know, doing something for you.
As you say, there was a gentleman's agreement, Ian, between Daniel Levy and Harry Kane. At least that's Harry Kane's understanding. And it's been a long summer for him, obviously, taking part in the Euros. I think he made it quite clear in the noises he was saying, some of the interviews he gave, that he was quite keen to look for a move away from Tottenham Hotspur. He's given pretty much everything to the club, as Marley's just said. But there are a section of Tottenham supporters, and supporters of other clubs for that matter, that have suggested that this is a bad look for Kane, whatever that means. Do you think anyone will care about that if the deal does eventually go through? Because it's quite clear what Kane is trying to do. If Daniel Levy isn't keen to sell him and he feels that there's been a gentleman's agreement, well, Kane's going to need to try and take some action on his side as well to make sure that, effectively, he gets what he wants.
I don't think it's going to come across as a bad look, ultimately, because he's been quite clear, as you mentioned there, about his intentions, you know, and it's nothing against Tottenham. I'm sure if Tottenham were competing regularly at the top of the table and in Europe and had a genuine chance, rather than being an outsider who, oh, they've got to the final, who actually, like Man City, perhaps start the season and you know that that's their aim, that they're going to get to the final and hopefully win the European Cup and all that kind of stuff, win the Champions League. You could see that why would he want to move anywhere else? But Tottenham are not that team, unfortunately. They're not. They're not strong enough to really dominate Europe. And Harry Kane has made it clear that he wants to win trophies. Tottenham are not known for winning trophies lately. And they've come close, but I mean, what, League Cup? Does that really fulfil the desire of Harry Kane to win trophies? No, probably not. He wants Premier League winners' medals. He wants Champions League winners' medals and whatever else that you can win. If you win the Champions League, the European Super Cup or World Club Champions or whatever it is, you know, that's the kind of stuff he wants. And I don't think Tottenham can give him that. And he's been pretty consistent over the last couple of years that, look, you know, I want to win trophies, and has laid down the gauntlet to Daniel Levy, saying, well, if you want me to remain here in your team as one of your squad, then you need to match my ambition, and if you can't do that, then my ambition, you know, needs to be matched by someone else. So I think, you know, if he does move on, he's given his all for Tottenham. Tottenham fans can't say, well, this is a surprise that he's promised his future and he'd never leave and he's, you know, going to go off and do the dirty on us. I think only if he left to go to Arsenal would there be maybe uproar. But even that line's been crossed in the last few years by some other players. I think moving to Man City, everybody hopefully will be able to see what, you know, where he's coming from. The only thing is that Daniel Levy isn't going to budge on it. And there was an interview last night, I think it was, with Harry Redknapp, where Harry Redknapp said, oh, you know, forget it, mate, forget it. He ain't going to budge on that. It's 120 million, or you can go home, you know, just forget it. It's going to be a waste of time, isn't it?
Something was like he that. Leaning out of his car window whilst he was doing the interview?
Yeah, it was like this. He was driving past at the time. Forget it. that. So, I think that's your big issue, is that Daniel Levy's digging his heels in. He ain't going to budge. You say that Harry Redknapp says he doesn't do emotions. You know, might have had a gentleman's agreement with Daniel Levy, but Harry Redknapp saying that Daniel Levy don't recognise them. So that's your issue.
Can you think of a worse person to have a gentleman's agreement with than Daniel Levy? Because I'm struggling. Like, unless you're talking about war criminals or something like that, then I'm talking. I mean, as businessmen
maybe
go,
maybe Mussolini or something like that. Man.
You can't compare Daniel Levy to a dictator. I mean,
yes, you can.
Imagine Daniel Levy on Dragon's Den. He'd never invest in anything. He'd just be like, nope, not having that.
Well, I think Daniel Levy's stubbornness can be a benefit and an asset, but also a bit of a hindrance, because I think Tottenham were keen to sign Jack Grealish from Aston Villa 4 or 5 years ago when Villa got relegated from the Premier League. And that was a £25 million deal and he wasn't keen to go through with it. And now, look, Jack Grealish is looking like he could be the first British £100 million player. So it just goes to show that sometimes your stubbornness isn't the best. And in terms of the respect that Kane might get or not get from this deal, Marley, I've seen a few Tottenham fans on social media saying that, or basically sticking the knife in to Harry Kane. Do you think that's a little bit unfair? Do you think he deserves the respect? He's warranted the respect. And yeah, it's a messy ending. And obviously, he would rather it have been a clean break from Tottenham and everything went through smoothly. But it's very rarely the case when a player that good and that highly regarded and in that much of demand, it's very rare that a deal does go through as smoothly as some people would have hoped for. Do you think, in terms of respect, that Kane will have lost respect? And if he has lost respect from Spurs fans, do you think that's fair from their part?
Look, I can understand it. However, in the grand scheme of things, you can't blame him for what he might be about to do. Because, you know, he's one of the best strikers in the world. He wants to win trophies. He's won literally nothing in his career. Not a scratch. All he's done, he's been to the finals of the Euros and with England, obviously, and the Champions League 2 years ago and the League Cup last year. So that's not enough to look back on in 50 years' time when you're with your grandkids, and or 20, 25, 30 years' time if you're with your grandkids and you're 50-odd. You know, you're thinking, you've got nothing to show them. Like, granddad, where's the proof that you were the best player in the world at one point? It's like, well, you've got no trophies to prove it. He's still got records and things like that that he can have.
I wonder if YouTube will be a thing. Go on YouTube, lads.
it'd be like augmented reality, by then. You'd probably be able to, like, drop yourself into the game or something. But no, it's, you know, you can't blame him. But the sort of social media age and the fact that, you know, a lot of 15-year-old virgins on Twitter are going to be like, oh, well, he was never that good anyway. And it's like, well, you were eight when he started scoring goals for you guys. Like, you don't understand what a player he is. It's kind of, so it's this sort of, this age of, like, of hatred and social media sort of cesspit that will sort of see the hate reflected. But any fan with the head screwed on is, you know, is able to see that one Audi Cup in pre-season is not good enough to keep Harry Kane at your football club. It's just not. Like, I think about if this was me in 2006 on this podcast and Alan Shearer wanted to move to Man United, it's kind of a similar situation. Like, Shearer never moved. But this situation now, I mean, if this was the present day and we had, and, you know, Shearer was Kane, and let's say, you know, I'm a Newcastle fan and I didn't want Shearer to leave, for example, but you've got to use your brain and say you can't really deny him it, in my opinion, because, you know, my club isn't going to win the trophies that he wants to win, that his talent deserves, and it was only through absolute loyalty that he managed to stay and to bin off Man United a few times in Shearer's case. But it's not like that for every player, you know. They want to win trophies. I mean, Kane was an Arsenal fan as a kid. It's not like he grew up in a Spurs shirt and he's always wanted to love them and whatever. But it's just one of them. I think you got to use your brain on things and say, you know, we're not really rivals. Yes, we might both be in the top six, but we're not rivals because Man City are winning the league every year. And Spurs are just floating around, just being cut off gradually from the top four and the top six. So it's not really something that I don't think you can get too mad about.
In terms of Spurs thinking of fining him, do you think that just adds fuel to the fire of him wanting out? Is that just going to basically...
What's the point? Keyes is on 250 grand a week. What are you going to fine him? 2 weeks wages?
It's just going to make him go, fine.
I know what you mean in terms of it doesn't mean much in terms of the financial punishment, but in terms of thinking of fining him, does that just make Harry Kane go, all right, fine, well, I'm definitely going to leave then? Is it kind of Levy trying to go for the reverse psychology? It's like, oh, well, I'll just fine you then. It's almost like pettiness in a way. I understand why they would need to fine him, because, you know, obviously you've got a bit of order to upkeep as sort of the chairman of the club, and, you know, making sure that other players don't follow a similar pathway. But in terms of fining him, this has happened so many times over the years. I just don't think that is the right solution. And we don't have a solution yet to Harry Kane and the transfer saga that has rumbled on all summer. Of course, the window closes at the end of this month, so still plenty of time for the deal to be done. But you do feel this one will go all the way until the end of the month. And especially that first Tottenham Hotspur game of the season, considering it's against Manchester City, I can't see Harry Kane taking part in that one, that's for sure. Time for a quick break here on Football Social Daily. More transfer chat after the break. We'll be talking about James Maddison, who Arsenal are after. There's been a bit of an update there. And Leon Bailey is a new signing who's arrived at Aston Villa. We'll talk about it next here on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily from Sport Social. Three podcasts a week in the meantime between Premier League seasons, and the new campaign for 21-22 will start on the 13th of August. From then on, daily Premier League podcasts every single day of the season from us here. So why not hit subscribe, and that way you won't miss a single thing. Time to talk about Arsenal and their pursuit of James Maddison. We spoke about this on Monday's Football Social Daily, but Football London have come up with a bit of an update saying that James Maddison is valued by Leicester at £60 million, but Arsenal don't want to pay that, so they're offering a player plus cash deal. Why don't Arsenal want to pay that, Marley? Is it poor hierarchical management? Is it they're just being stingy? Is it they don't think Maddison is worth that? You're looking at other clubs in the top six spending decent money, and that seems like that's a good price nowadays for a very good player. You're looking £60 million, really, is your kind of upper echelon of player is what you're paying. Why are Arsenal so reluctant to pay these big fees? Because if they want to compete in and around the big six, that's what they're going to have to do.
I don't think they've got it. I think they want players who are above what they actually have in the bank. You know, they signed, like last season, they signed Partey for £50 million, and that was like a sort of last gasp attempt at nicking a place in the top six and keeping themselves in Europe. But now they've got reduced income from no Europe, and it wouldn't surprise me if the coffers were a bit dry. I feel like they've got to sell before they can buy, or somehow drive the price down, and that's probably why we're seeing player plus cash. I don't know which players are being linked, because I'm not entirely sure. The ones that would be linked are the ones that Leicester would want. You know what I mean?
Like, well, that was my next question. Would Leicester even want any Arsenal players in replacement for James Maddison?
Depends.
Because
it is,
I think if you offer £40 million and an Arsenal player, I mean, it's not going to be Saka, you know, and then they're not going to offer anyone who they think is half decent at the Gunners. So
I'd offer them Willock if I was Arsenal.
Yeah, maybe. You know, I mean, maybe that's fair enough. But in terms of what Leicester are looking to do, I mean, would they even accept that as an offer, as a proposition?
I don't know. I doubt it, because Leicester, as we've said, you know, numerous times on this podcast, Leicester will back themselves to get transfers right themselves. They don't need handouts from other clubs. Like, I think player plus cash only works when you can get a player that is above the selling club's sort of level. You know, like if for example, Newcastle sold St-Maximin to Arsenal for cash plus Joe Willock, Like, that's obviously, that makes sense because we get cash, we get a player. The player plays more at the club he's going to and gets a proper home. And it fits. But from Arsenal to Leicester, I mean, you know, the buying club is giving a player from, you know, from their squad to a squad that's already higher than them and comfortably higher than them as well in the league in the last 2 years. So it doesn't really make sense. I don't know who they would throw into that sort of deal to sweeten it enough for Leicester to go, yeah, that's actually quite a good price. So I feel like it'd be 60 million or we'll see you next year when you might have Europe again, because this doesn't really make much sense for me. I can see Maddison at Arsenal, but it's up to Arsenal to go and buy him. You're not going to get him on the cheap. Leicester are a very, very well-run club. They don't need the money massively. They've got their structure is probably the best in the Premier League in terms of the board are on point with the management and the playing squad. Everyone's pulling in the same direction. They get everything right on and off the pitch, so why would they need to sell for 40 million plus a player that they probably don't want?
Well, this is going to rattle a few, Ian. Is Leicester to Arsenal seen still as a step up these days? Because no doubting, 5-6, I mean, even the season that Arsenal lost out the Premier League to Leicester in 2016, you'd argue that Arsenal was still a step up to Leicester City. But since then, can you still consider Arsenal a step up? Leicester aren't a top six club. Arsenal are, in terms of the big six, I mean, not top six in terms of places, but big six in terms of the biggest clubs in England with the most pulling power, with the most power in general. But in terms of a step up, is it more of a step sideways to go from Leicester to Arsenal?
I think you've got to look at it on two different levels, haven't you? That you've got the reputation and the awareness and the history of a club and how that club is probably perceived not just in this country but around the world as being one of the big clubs when you look at the likes of Real Madrid, Barcelona, Man United, Bayern Munich or whatever the household names are. Arsenal are one of the big names, aren't they? The big names. But that big name doesn't necessarily mean that you're brilliant or a step up on the pitch. So I suppose it depends as a player. If you want to be part of that whole Arsenal brand, if you want to call it that, that thing that Arsenal is, and probably a bit of showbiz that comes with that, more than with the best one in the world, more than you would get at Leicester.
Yeah. I mean, Arsenal are a massive club globally in terms of brand.
That's, yeah.
There's no doubt in that. Fan base, huge. Worldwide fan base. And in general, they are one of the biggest clubs in the country. There's no denying that. But if you're talking purely football in terms, James Maddison will get probably better wages at Arsenal. But in terms of chances and ability and, you know, opportunities to win trophies, I would say that they're on a level pegging at the moment. Leicester just won the FA Cup last season.
Yeah, I would say that it is at best a sidestep. I don't think it's certainly not a step up. I think it's a sidestep. There might be better opportunities in the bigger picture further down the line. But, you know, you see a lot of other players as well, like, you know, Arsenal have got some decent players, like, you know, Eddie Nketiah, for example. You know, he's a decent player who you would argue that if he was, say, for example, if he was a Leicester player, just supposing, he would get more chances and would be a bigger star than he is at Arsenal. Whereas at Arsenal, he's constantly the new kid that's coming through and yet they're signing more players over the top of him. And I think that it doesn't give them that chance to flourish. And that would be the question, really, for James Maddison. If you go into Arsenal, are you going to get the same opportunities to play and be part of that action and be a central leading figure of this Arsenal team? Are you going to spend most of your time coming on 75 minutes?
I think Maddison personally is good enough to get into Arsenal's starting.
Yeah, you think so? Because Arsenal haven't actually done much, have they? You know, they haven't been competing at the top level. They spent a good portion of the season hovering above the relegation zone last year.
It goes back to what Marley says. Player for player, I think Leicester have a better squad.
Yeah, I think they do.
I really do. I think they've got a better squad. And again, underlining what Marley said, their recruitment has been better than Arsenal's. And I think if you literally did a 1-11, compare and contrast, I think you'd be picking more Leicester players over Arsenal players. So,
and what is going on at Arsenal, by the way, with, you know, throwing money around all of a sudden? You know, they've been last year.
They don't throw money around, though. This is the thing. I mean, this Pepe deal that was £75 million, that's been paid in instalments. It's still not been fully paid off yet.
It's like the Grattan catalogue.
It's not like Manchester United when they bought Harry Maguire for £80 million. That was paid up front, £80 million quid. You know, Arsenal's 75 or 70 or whatever it was for Pepe. It's paid in instalments. You know, and you could probably get away with that a little bit more now because clubs are pretty desperate for cash. So deals, you know, might be sanctioned in that sort of way over the next couple of seasons with the knock-on effect of the pandemic. But in terms of Arsenal, you know, spending 60 million on Madison, and even if it's 50 million and a player plus cash deal, I mean, are they going to pay that? Is that going to be a flat fee? Is that going to be straight up, or is it going to be in instalments? Because if I was Leicester City, I'd be saying thanks, but no thanks. We're quite happy to keep James Maddison. And actually, on that, Leicester City do have a pre-season friendly tonight against Villarreal at the King Power Stadium. So I'll be very interested to see if James Maddison is involved in Brendan Rodgers' squad there amidst all this speculation. I can't see why he wouldn't be. Time to move on now. More transfer chat. And this time we're going to switch to Aston Villa, where Leon Bailey has signed a contract at the club, joining from Bayer Leverkusen, the Jamaica international, a very lively, sparky winger, plenty of pace, plenty of direct activity when it comes to attacking the penalty area, perhaps slightly inconsistent. But this ties in quite nicely with the news that's broken this morning whilst we've been recording Football Social Daily. Jack Grealish is set to sign a deal at Manchester City as early as today, worth £100 million, which would make him the most expensive British transfer of all time. This is being reported by several high-profile news outlets. It looks very likely that Grealish is going to sign. Is the Leon Bailey arrival, Marley, a clear enough indication that Grealish is going to make his way out of Aston Villa, do you think?
Yes, I think so. I think, look, if you weren't, if you're an Aston Villa fan and you weren't sceptical about Buendia coming in and then big money being bid on Ward-Prowse, I think now when you realise that Bailey's been signed, I think that has to be a sign that somebody's leaving. I know, I remember a few months ago we put out something on social media that said, it was one of us talking about, you know, this might be, Buendia signing might be the sign that Grealish is going, and we got so much backlash from Villa fans who were lining up saying, "Oh well, we're really rich. We've got all this money. We don't need to sell. We don't need to buy, you know, one player a year. We can go and spend what we want. We can be in the top six and whatever." Well, sorry, but it doesn't look like that way, does it? So, you know, you've already spent, you're sort of pre-spending the Grealish money on Buendia and Bailey and possibly another player towards the end of the transfer window as well. But, you know, that's what it is. That's seems like that's the way it's going to go. Bailey's a decent player. Of course he is. He's bright, he's quick, he brings more pace to what Villa already have. He plays on that left side where Grealish played. Everything points to it's one in, one out. So you're looking at that and saying, can he have that impact that Grealish had? Probably not. But can him and Buendia and Bertrand Traore, can they sort of chip in and fill that void? Then possibly. But we'll have to wait and see, because, you know, Bailey scored, I think it's 15 goals last season, mostly from sort of left wing. And that's where he's going to play in this Villa system. So they'll be hoping that that he can back it up and sort of step into that void that Grealish is probably going to leave.
Yeah, I definitely think that this signing does signify that there is going to be an outgoing at Aston Villa. That does look like it's going to be Jack Grealish. Now, we've seen social media videos of Grealish taking photos with the fans, and it kind of harks back to what we were talking about with Harry Kane in terms of the respect that Grealish has been getting. I mean, people have been saying that, you know, Manchester City are a small club that was formed 10 years ago. Why would you move there? I think, Ian, I'm with Marley. And the reason you'd move there is because you are infinitely more likely to win a trophy next season at Manchester City than you are at Aston Villa. And that might be the case, that Villa are extremely wealthy and they have a brilliant plan in place and they have ambition. But it's all well and good having those things. Manchester City have already got those things. They've got that pedigree of winning trophies. And I think that's exactly what Jack Grealish wants. So can you begrudge Grealish for leaving a club in which he signed a new five-year contract at just last September? And is his boyhood club, effectively, he's the captain of Aston Villa, he is their hero, their sweetheart, their talisman. He's done a lot for Aston Villa, and the fans do adore him. Can you understand that this is quite an emotional subject for them? But can you also understand Jack Grealish's point of view that he's probably leaving for a better career, no disrespect intended?
Yeah, I mean, who knows where Aston Villa will end up in time? You know, they're clearly building something there. They don't want to be in a situation where they're back down in the Championship again. They want to remain in the Premier League and be a force in the Premier League, but that is going to take some time. And Jack Grealish's time is now. You know, his stock is high. He's had a good time at the Euros, and you know, the next few years are going to be the peak of his career. And staying at Aston Villa with the best one in the world, I think it might just be out of time, you know, to really achieve what he wants to achieve. And you don't want to have any regrets. You know, this opportunity's come along. If he didn't take it, he'll always be wondering what if. And if things aren't great at Aston Villa, he'll be looking back, wondering what might have been. And we talked about Harry Kane earlier as well, and the situation there that's going on. And obviously it's going to be very frustrating for Harry Kane. He wants a move. He wants to be able to achieve what Jack Grealish might well be able to achieve in the next year, you know, in winning trophies and winning medals. And that's, as a footballer, that's what you want. And, you know, fair play to Aston Villa for, you know, assisting him on it. I don't think he's going to be booed by Aston Villa fans when the two sides meet. And I think that he's you know, it is his club, Aston Villa, you know, his boyhood club, his club that he supports genuinely. And I think that, who knows, further down the line, he might return back there once, you know, in the later years of his career. And it's not the same situation, really. Well, it kind of is in a way. I mean, you know, Leeds United found themselves in trouble. James Milner, for example, you know, he was a diehard Leeds fan, went to play at Liverpool, and look at what he's achieved now. But he doesn't get any abuse from any Leeds fans because he plays for Liverpool now, you know, and would be warmly welcomed back should he, you know, in the twilight years of his career, in the next few years, perhaps want to return back where he from whence he came. So you've got to go off and take these chances. You'll always regret it. You'll always wonder what if, and you will always despise anybody that stands in your way. And that's the difference between the two stories, between Grealish and Kane. And it must be frustrating for Harry Kane to see Jack Grealish going on this journey now, thinking, you know, I should be getting signed as well today. he's just turned up in Manchester. Apparently he's been seen as Grealish. So we are on.
Yeah, he's having a medical today. He's having a medical today, allegedly. That's according to the Daily Mail, who first reported it, also being reported by The Athletic, and national radio stations too are picking it up. So certainly feels like there's plenty of traction around this one. Jack Grealish, by the next time we release an episode of Football Social Daily on Friday, could well be a Manchester City player for £100 million. That's one half of the Manchester City transfer saga this summer. The other half, as Ian says, is Harry Kane. I wonder how long it will take before, if indeed, that deal goes over the line. Time to talk about Chelsea. We'll do it next on Football Social Daily. Romelu Lukaku is being eyed up by the Blues once again. They already had him once back in 2011 to 2014. Could they have to fork out £100 million themselves to bring him back to Stamford Bridge? We'll talk about it next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk. Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
This is Football Social Daily. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Niall McCorn. Ian Brannan and Marley Anderson alongside me, and it has been transfer chat which has dominated today's podcast agenda. Understandably so. News that Jack Grealish could be on his way to City for £100 million. Also, rumours linking James Maddison from Leicester to Arsenal. Harry Kane and his possible move to Manchester City very much up in the air. And here's another big name transfer that could take place over the course of the next 3 weeks or so until the window shuts. And that involves Chelsea and their desire to re-sign Inter Milan striker Romelu Lukaku. The big Belgian was at Chelsea between 2011 and 2014, played just 10 Premier League games, was loaned out to West Brom, scored a truckful of goals, was loaned out to Everton, scored a truckful of goals, and you can guess what happened when Everton signed him permanently. Yep, scored a truckload of goals. Went to Manchester United, didn't really work out for him at Old Trafford, but still a very healthy goal scoring record. And since then he moved to Serie A and to Inter Milan, who won the Scudetto last season, and again, he wasn't shy in finding the back of the net there. Inter Milan have rejected an £85 million bid from Chelsea for the striker. Financially, we know that Inter are in a bit of a mess. They could do with the money. Turning down £85 million says quite a lot about their desire to keep Lukaku, Marley. Do you think this is them being stern in saying, we're keeping Lukaku because he's key to us retaining our Scudetto next season? Or do you think they're angling for a better offer and possibly hoping that Chelsea come back with an increased bid?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think they just, £85 million is like a starting bid. I think they probably want close to 100, if not slightly more. There's talk about players being involved and things like that as well to try and drive the price down. I think Marcos Alonso was involved and possibly Emerson Palmieri as well, or instead. It's probably just Inter wanting the maximum they can get. I'm not going to pretend to know Inter's financial difficulties. I don't understand them at all. I don't understand how they've got in this situation where they've just won the league and then they couldn't afford to keep the manager, and they can't seem to afford to keep their best players now as well. So that's a bit bizarre to me, but it's a financial issue. You know, they've and selling a player for close to, if not more than, £100 million is a good way to try and offset that. I think if this is true, you know, this whole move, I don't know why you wouldn't go for Erling Haaland over Lukaku if he's, because at this price he might be slightly cheaper if you can put players into that bid as well, Haaland. But again, you know, I don't know how much he wants to leave this year, Haaland, with Sancho leaving as well, so maybe that's an issue. But, you know, Lukaku, he shouldn't have ever been let go by Chelsea in the first place. They should have let him, you know, sort of mature a little bit into the player he looked like, because he still looked, you know, decent when he was at Chelsea. They ended up selling him to Everton via West Brom on loan and all the rest of it. And it was just like, you know, this scattergun approach to Chelsea's transfer budget is what they've, you know, I mean, what is it? 8 years later, they're trying to sign him for six times more than they sold him for. So I don't know. It's bizarre, but he'll come in, he'll score your goals. Of course he will. But what do you do with Werner and Havertz and Mount and Pulisic and Hudson-Odoi and Ziyech and all the rest of them? Like, I don't understand how this is all gonna fit into one team under Tuchel. But having said that, the top scorer last season was Jorginho on seven goals, and all seven of them were penalties in the Premier League. So they do need to sort out the goal situation. And that would probably result in a hectic final 2 weeks of the window, where they need to sell a couple of players purely to free up the squad space that Lukaku coming in would afford.
Let's move on to Chelsea having Lukaku before, like you said, Marley, before we talk about the price, because there are reports suggesting £100 million could be enough to tempt Inter, who basically do need the cash. I don't think there's any secret there. Antonio Conte, their manager, former Chelsea boss, in fact, has left the Serie A side after they won the Scudetto. So there are issues there over in Milan. But in terms of Chelsea having Lukaku before, they didn't give him any games. Do you think Chelsea will ever learn their lesson, Ian, when it comes to signing former players? They had Mohamed Salah, didn't work out for him admittedly, went away to Serie A, came back to Liverpool and became a completely different player. Kevin De Bruyne had the potential, he was let go because he wasn't given opportunities, comes back to the Premier League and is a revelation with Manchester City. And now Romelu Lukaku, a player they had, who they saw out on loan at teams like West Brom and Everton, scoring goal after goal after goal. And now they're going to have to possibly spend £100 million to get him back. Do you think the Blues will ever learn their lesson when it comes to that? Or are they okay with that business plan that they seem to have?
They're far too trigger happy, aren't they? They don't give people time. They want instant success. And that obviously comes from upstairs, that, you know, we spend the money and we want to you know, I'm not saying they're buying the league, but in a way they are, because they want players at their peak, and they don't give the younger players time to come through and show what they really can do. What they do is they let them go off, sell them, and then if they turn into something, they seem to be quite happy to buy them back. I mean, it's not a very economical way of running a business, really, but it's where they're at. And you look at the list of players that Chelsea had and have let go. Declan Rice, let him go. We've mentioned Lukaku. Nathan Aki, another Man City player. Nemanja Matic, let him go.
And then they signed him back. They, you know, same thing with Lukaku as what happened with Matic. They let him go, signed him back, and they won two Premier League titles with him in the team.
Yeah, the list goes on. Eddie Nketiah, we mentioned him earlier at Arsenal. As a youngster, they let him go straight to Arsenal. And he's, you know, he's not there yet, but he will be. And of course, Lord Patrick Bamford, another one that they let go. It just seems to be a big failure in their. It's either a failure or, like you say, it's a calculated business model.
Do you think it's because they've got too many players, Ian? Because
yeah.
I think when Lukaku was there, Diego Costa was kind of the main striker there at the time. Drogba was still there. You know, he was playing second fiddle to Drogba. And that season when Chelsea won the Champions League in 2012, Drogba was excellent. You weren't going to dislodge him from the team. Lukaku was still a very young man. But in the years after that, they replaced Drogba with Diego Costa, and it felt like Lukaku wasn't ever considered as first choice, despite the fact he was going away to Everton and West Brom and scoring loads of goals.
It seems to me that, yeah, they do have too many players. They do go around kind of hoovering up all this young talent. But it seems that there's a failure somewhere in the system, surely, of being able to identify the ones that have got it. And fine, loan them out to teams to get experience, because they're never going to improve if they're not getting the games. But don't go selling them and then selling them for, you know, 15 million quid to somebody, and then 3 years later signing them back for 90 or 100 million. Surely that doesn't make any sense. Surely in their youth development scheme, they should be able to spot the players that have got the potential but aren't quite there yet. And that seems to be the failure, that they can't spot the players that have got the potential but aren't quite there yet. But yet other teams can, because they're signing them, putting them in their team, and they're turning into world beaters. There's something in the, either in the management or the coaching or the talent spotting or something, that's too trigger happy that they want to get rid of these, whereas other teams are seeing that raw talent and nurturing it and bringing it out. You know, people like Guardiola can turn these players who Chelsea feel aren't good enough for them into, you know, potential Ballon d'Or winners.
In terms of the cost that Chelsea might have to pay to get Lukaku back, Marley, 100 million quid is what the reports are saying, as I mentioned a moment ago. We are seeing people complain that FFP is dead and Manchester City are ruining football if they spend 100 million on Grealish and 120 on Kane, 220 in one window. Chelsea did that last season. They spent 220 in a window last season, and they could end up spending another 100 million pound this window. So in two summers, they could have ended up spending 350 million ish. And no one says anything about that. So in terms of like the hypocrisy around people complaining at Manchester City for spending money, Chelsea have been doing this for years. In fact, they probably started it at the start of the century, which is, I think, something Jim mentioned earlier on this week on the podcast. So it's quite funny how things work like that, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people are letting Chelsea away with this. I just think the on-trend thing is to hate Man City because they're the ones winning things. Although, having said that, Chelsea won the bloody Champions League last year, so everybody maybe should be looking at them and saying, well, you know, if you've got a problem with Man City spending money on Kane and Grealish, that's the same amount as you spent last year on Ziyech and Pulisic and Werner and Havertz and all these players in the last sort of 18 months, and then you want to go and spend another 100 on Lukaku. So, I don't know, I just think if you've got such strong morals that you don't want players, teams to buy success and buy players and buy the league, then you're in the wrong sport. Like, that ship has sailed. As Jim said the other day, Pandora's box has been opened and you can't shut it again. The only way you're ever going to sort of take it backwards is if a governing regulatory body come in and said, well, this guy's worth that much and this guy's worth that much and you've only got this much to spend, so therefore you can't afford him or you can afford him. It's just, that's never, ever going to happen. So
there's a reason it's called the transfer market, isn't it? You know, if you went to a normal
fruit and veg market and someone was charging you 16 quid for an avocado, you'd probably say, no, thanks, I'm all right, mate. You can stick that where the sun don't shine and I'll go and buy my avocado somewhere else. And, you know, and that's the way the football transfer market works. If someone says, that's a bit much, I don't want to be spending that much on my fruit and veg, then you just don't spend it. And it's the same with players. You know, if Chelsea want that avocado so desperately, they're going to have to pay the money. And I think that that's just the way things are working now.
Yeah, maybe it's a Romelu Lukaku avocado or something like that. I can't even say that. I was trying to word smash them together.
I mean, Dick Advocaat would have been a better one if he was involved.
Nobody's paying for him.
Dick Advocaat. but yeah, Romelu Lukaku could be back at Chelsea by the start of the season. At least that's what reports are claiming. £85 million bid from Chelsea to Inter Milan for his services rejected. Reports suggesting it would need to be £100 million if he is to sign at the club. That's it for today's Football Social Daily. We're done for another episode. We'll be back on Friday. Cheers, Marley. Thank you very much, Ian.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
And don't forget to hit subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode of the show again. As we say, we're back to a 7-day-a-week schedule from the 13th of August, which is when liftoff for the new 21-22 season takes place. That first game on that Friday night should be an exciting one. And from then on, a new podcast every single day of the Top Flight season. We're looking forward to it. We hope you are too. We'll catch you next time on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.